This show is for general educational purposes only and is not a substitute for specific legal advice by a competent lawyer practicing in your jurisdiction.
Good morning, New York. I'm Elisa Geffner.
And I'm Carolyn Kirsch. We are partners in a matrimonial and family law firm representing individuals who are involved in all issues under the divorce and family law umbrella. We've been working together for 17 amazing years and have had the opportunity to help so many people.
It's really exciting to be here, and welcome to Divorce and Happily Ever After, where we're going to provide our insight as to family relationships, divorce, and how divorce really creates an opportunity for personal growth. We'll be sharing experts in this arena for you to listen to. And it's based upon our years of seeing people and representing people over the course of our career.
And today we're going to be speaking with Scott Zuckerman, who is the president and CEO of Wexford Financial Strategies. He's also a dedicated husband, father of two, and stepfather of two additional children.
And he will be telling us his divorce and happily ever after story.
And now we're going into officially the summer season. And I just have to say, Elisa, I'm so excited that your pool open and our Sunday fun days are back. And we've been waiting for this all year when we've been looking out the window at your covered pool over the winter.
Yeah. And then my daughter, Fiona, you know, she's 8 years old. And I don't know if anybody else has this problem, but anytime my kids, or especially her, puts on something, she's uncomfortable, no matter what it is. She can't wear her socks. They don't fit her right. Or, her shorts, she doesn't want to wear them. She never wants to wear what I want her to wear.
And the other day, my daughter complained that Fiona wasn't going in the pool because she only had one swimsuit that she liked the best, and she was saving that for swim class. So my daughter was crying that her daughter wasn't going to go in the pool with her because she didn't have her swimsuit.
So we now went on to Amazon, of course, and bought about 4 bathing suits. They look adorable, but I am actually a little nervous about when they come, whether they're going to fit her. And I said, do you know how to return these? And to my nanny who picked them out with her. And she says, I don't know that I've ever returned something on Amazon. I said, okay, we're going to have to figure that out, because I'm sure we're going to get these cute little bathing suits. And bottom's going to be too loose. The top's going to be too loose.
And then you have my daughter, who is 8 going on 18. And she wants to wear these little tiny bathing suits that I tell her are completely not age appropriate. And she picks out these crop tops and she wants to wear them to school. And I tell her, no way, put a, t-shirt underneath. And she has just a heart attack every day. She needs to slow down.
Yeah. And so, in our business, especially, this is kind of an issue that comes up, because in divorcing families, there's always that switch off of clothing. And we definitely have sometimes we write in the agreement whether clothing was going to be returned or not returned. I don't know if you've had these issues.
Because when you pay child support is supposed to be used to pay for clothing, right? So if you have the non-custodial parent who's taking the children, the custodial parent is supposed to provide the clothing. And what I've seen happen, like in a couple of cases, the non-custodial parent will complain. They give all the old clothes that are stained, that don't fit anymore, pants that are flood pants, all the hand-me-downs, which basically forces the non-custodial parent who's paying child support to then buy their own clothing, because they don't want their children carted around on weekends looking like a mess.
Yeah, I send Charlie with clothing for the kids, and it always said, just get the laundry bag back. I mean, he doesn't do the laundry, but he definitely returns the clothes.
But not everyone does, and we hear those complaints all the time. I sent all these, all of this clothing, no one returned them, and sometimes it's a real issue.
Yeah. So now in celebrity news, when I was just thinking about this, one of the most publicized breakups going on right now, and makeups in another regard, is the Alex Rodriguez and Jennifer Lopez. They were engaged to be married, and there were many rumors about Alex potentially cheating. I mean, he's a professional sportsman, so it's not surprising. I apologize for anyone who is offended by that. And I know one of those rumors that were swirling around the time that Southern Charm was closing, and I am a reality buff, or whatever you call those crazy people who actually keep E! And Bravo in business. And, there was that Madison LaCroix, and there were DMs going back and forth between them, supposedly or supposedly not, but then now they're breaking up. But some people think the good news about that is the Bennifer might be coming back. Jen Lopez is now possibly shacking up with Ben Affleck. She purchased a bachelorette pad, you would say, and I think Ben was seen coming out of it, which is interesting. They were together in 2002, and now 19 years later, they're rekindling, which I think is interesting. I mean, I don't know. What do you think about getting back with your old flame?
I think no backsies, but that's just me, But speaking of J-Lo, she's been engaged engaged an astonishing 5 times and married 3 times. So that means she has 5 engagement rings. And, you know, if you look into that, her first engagement was to a humble restaurant owner, and they were married in 1997. It ended in 1998. He purchased her a pear-shaped engagement ring that had an estimated 6-figure value.
I will interrupt you, though, Carolyn, as you're going through these stats of the people she was engaged to and how long she's been with them engaged, there's a commonality that you'll find out.
I noticed that as well, Lisa, but I'll let you recap. Next, we have Chris Judd. That was a choreographer for Love Don't Cost a Thing. They were married in 2001. They separated in 2002. Yes, Lisa was very good at sensing patterns. He purchased her an emerald cut ring with a 6-figure price tag as well. Next, we have Ben Affleck, who is back, apparently. They dated in 2002. They split in 2003.
It's another pattern. A one-yearer.
And I think it's also interesting that, you know, she gets these rings after just a year.
I mean,
some women date these men for years and they're just waiting. You know, you're the first time you're getting married, you want that engagement ring. And that's a whole nother series. We'll tell you Elisa's funny story. But, she does pretty well.
It's J-Lo.
It is J-Lo. So with Ben Affleck, she got a 6-carat radiant cut pink diamond, which was worth $1.2 million. Next, we have Mark Anthony. He got her an 8.5-carat blue diamond, which had an estimated value of $4 million. And then we have A-Rod, who got her a huge emerald cut engagement ring. And the funny thing is, if you look at the price of this, the sources range, they're really all over the place, anywhere from $1.2 million to $6
million. So euros, I think they put it in. I don't know.
I converted them, but, because otherwise it's not a fair comparison, but you know that it's all over the map, which is pretty interesting.
So it kind of brings up the question: do you get to keep the ring if you get engaged and you break up? And there is, obviously we can only speak from New York, and I've had people ask me this question, unfortunately. And generally, no, it's a conditional gift. So if you get engaged and you decide to break it up, whoever breaks it up, you got to give the ring back. But there is sort of a caveat to that. And we actually, when we had our inaugural launch of our firm, we brought this up as a joke. But if you give a ring on Christmas or a birthday, is that a conditional gift in contemplation of marriage, or is it just a gift?
So the interesting part about that is it's not so black and white, because it centers around, I guess, the intent. Is it a gift in contemplation of marriage, or is it a Christmas gift, or is it a birthday gift? And the case law actually speaks on this, that if it's not clear, you'd have to go to a trial to find out what was the real intent. Was it for Christmas, was it this whatever 6-carat radiant cut pink diamond that was just for Christmas, or was it in contemplation of marriage? If you do actually get married, forgetting about the holidays for a moment, it's still, then it becomes that person's separate property.
Meaning that they don't have to give half of the value over, at divorce, because they got it before their marriage.
But a wedding band, for example, you're married when you turn over the ring. That's a gift between spouses. Gifts between spouses are marital property that
are divided in divorce.
Subject to distribution.
So, sometimes people upgrade their engagement ring.
So if you trade one in and you get another ring and you want to get all different side stones or upgrade the top ring, then you...
Now it's marital to be divided.
So before you upgrade, think twice about that. And then another interesting point, which we don't have enough time to get into today, but is what if you lose your ring and you have an insurance policy that covers the ring, so it's your separate property, but you're married and you're paying a joint insurance policy that has a jewelry rider, then what happens? What do you do with that insurance proceeds? What if you don't put it into another ring? And again, I think it, gets a little sticky there.
I think sometimes we have these conversations with people, but at the end of the day, most people leave with their jewelry at the end of the marriage.
Unless someone swipes it first.
Yes, that happens. Looting it. We're excited to have Scott Zuckerman here today. He's the president and CEO of Wexford Financial Strategies, and also an author of a book, which is really, really cool to say. So I have to tell you, Scott, that one of the things that's on my bucket list is to write a book. That's a huge accomplishment. What was that process like for you?
Well, first, I just want to thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. And writing a book was something that I always wanted to do as well. And I took the opportunity during COVID to, I guess, put the fingers to the keyboard, so to speak, I tried
not playing Billy Joel though.
Right. Yeah. So
he could do that also.
I did, and I will say I had tried so many times in the past, and I'd open up Microsoft Word and I'd sit there with a blank screen, and I'm like, oh, forget it. I'm not doing this.
Carolyn does that when she writes legal briefs.
But I will say I did seize the opportunity during COVID. A lot of downtime, just sitting at home. And I took the opportunity to go to the office and spend a couple hours every single day and just write.
So some people gained 15 pounds and drank a lot, and you wrote a book.
Yes.
Okay.
I think I did both. I gained the 15 pounds and drank a lot, too.
You had one chapter which I really thought is a lot of issue on Long Island about living beyond your means. And I know in divorce cases, it's very hard when people are living beyond their means to deal with the reality of that and speak to clients about that. Just generally, you know, as being a financial advisor, do you find that, you know, that's happening tremendously here on Long Island?
And what, Scott, I mean, I know we've spoken about this a lot. A lot of our clients will say, well, aren't I supposed to get support to keep me in the lifestyle that I'm accustomed? And the answer is not necessarily, because when you have to live under two separate households, you can't possibly live the same way. But I know you have a more practical, you know, answer to that.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I will say, it's not just Long Island. Certainly, Long Island is well known for the syndrome I like to call credit and forget it, where you take out the credit cards and don't worry about it. I'll catch up. I'll pay for it later. And before you know it, it just snowballs out of control. So I tell people, if you can't afford it, don't buy it. I personally don't have any credit cards. I went through a divorce. I inherited credit card debt in my divorce, and I made sure that I paid off every single penny, and then I never used a credit card again. Never used a credit card to carry a balance.
You
right?
did say something in your book about one of the myths is that your credit score improves if you carry a balance.
Right. Yeah, that is definitely a myth. Just because you carry a balance on a credit card does not mean that your credit score is going to go up. The credit companies are looking at your credit history. How good are you at managing your credit? Are you making on-time payments? Are you not using more than 10 to 15% of your credit line? Those are all things. But to carry a balance, that is just a complete myth. The more you pay off your credit cards and don't carry balances, or if you're going to charge and you pay it off every month, then that's going to certainly increase your credit score. And as far as what you were saying, Carolyn, as far as divorce and managing money to maintain a lifestyle, you're 100% correct, especially the breadwinner is trying to maintain two separate households in some cases, especially if there's a non-working spouse, and it's extremely difficult. But I will say that the foundation of every financial plan is cash flow. And notice I didn't say budget. I don't like budgeting. But cash flow is really important. Knowing what your fixed expenses are, that's not changing every single month, whether it be your car payment, your mortgage, taxes, etc. Your fixed expenses don't change, but your variable ones do.
That's where you're saying it's different than saying a budget. You're not necessarily putting yourself on a budget. It's just the reality of what you can and cannot do.
Exactly. And understanding these are my fixed expenses and everything else is variable. And it's managing those variable expenses to live within your means. Your fixed expenses, you can't help. But the variable ones you can.
What would you say if you have someone coming to you that is just starting a divorce proceeding or is thinking of divorce? You know, what is your top advice to them?
Go see Elisa and Carolyn.
Yes. after they see you, Scott. Right? Yeah. If they come to me first, I'm like, I know two great attorneys to send you to. I tell people cash flow number one thing. Make sure you put down in a spreadsheet exactly what your expenses are, so you know what to expect. The other thing is making sure that you redo your estate planning documents when everything is final, that you have an updated will, living will, healthcare proxy, power of attorney. For those who are listening and who may not be divorced and married, make sure you have that too. It's not just about divorce, but those documents are really important.
What you see a lot of people come through your doors, obviously. You have a big client base. Do you find a lot of people don't have those documents? Like
absolutely.
Wills?
I would say 7 out of 10 people who walk into my office do not have estate planning documents. I would say a third to a half don't have life insurance, which is the other thing, is making sure that you look through your life insurance, make sure that's set up properly. And that number two thing that I was or number three thing that I was about to talk about was beneficiary designations after you get divorced, making sure that those are proper, that ex-spouses aren't left as beneficiaries. Another mistake that people make, even, again, not divorced, is naming minor children as beneficiaries, which is a big no-no.
You had a chapter of that, part of that in your book, you were saying, and what you said, should I name my estate or should I name my child? Or
exactly. I mean, quite honestly, you don't want to name either. But I think in many instances, the estate is better than actually listing the minor child. But in just general advice, the estate and minor children is an absolute no-no. And that's why it's real important to have valid estate planning documents. And the other myth is that you have to be rich to have an estate plan. And that is just totally not true. I don't care how much or how little you have. You need those documents.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, just on a personal level, when you opened up your book and the first thing that you had said, you talked about where you lived and who you were. And I've known you since we were little kids, I think 10 years old. Why do you have this initiative for financial planning and entrepreneurship? Where did that come from? So that everybody can hear from you.
Well, I've been an entrepreneur since I'm 13. I started my first business, and I just always knew that I wanted to do something for myself. And I had no idea that I was going to go into financial consulting at all. It just kind of fell upon me. And it came at a really good time in my life because
a quick fact first, you were a DJ and you're a band player and you're a musician on top. So you have the left brain thing going and the right brain thing going.
Don't forget about flying airplanes.
Yes, a pilot. He's a pilot, correct. Not right now, because unfortunately he's wearing a boot on his leg.
Yes.
and that isn't as glorious as to how that happened.
No. I've always been inspired by business, and I grew up in a family business, very successful on Long Island, and I watched it fail after the second generation. And I just wanted to prevent other businesses from failing. I also had, as much as I was an entrepreneur, and I think any entrepreneurs out there can attest to this, you have just as many failures as successes, right? Sometimes even more failures than successes.
Yeah, they say we learn more from our failures
than
successes.
Exactly. And I had a business that after I graduated college that was successful, and unfortunately there was bad timing in that business, in the entertainment industry, and I declared bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And so I learned a lot from
that. That was part of the .com thing you were trying to create?
Exactly. That was the .bomb error.
Right.
Back in 2001 when the NASDAQ crashed and .com became .bomb. And I was involved in a startup in the entertainment industry that was a .com, and just got stuck with it. And I couldn't get out. But you know what? It was the best failure I ever had in my life, because if I didn't have that failure, I don't know if I'd be as successful as I am today. And that said, you know, how do you measure success, right? For me, it's never enough. And I'm in business to help people, and no matter how much or little money they have. And I always say, if you want help, I'm here to help you. And my mission.
It's sort of a scary thing. People don't want to face their finances. Yeah.
Well, Scott, what is your, what are those little chips that you give away?
Oh, yeah. So I don't carry business cards anymore. So my business card is a little round disc that says TUIT on one side. And on the other side, it says join the club with my website and phone number. And the TUIT is to it. So it's the old, I'll get around to it, right? I'll do my financial planning when I get around to it. I'll call my attorney, I'll get around to it. So now what I do is I hand out my chips and I say, you no longer need to get around to it. Here you go. You have one. So that's what I do.
I think that's the best thing in the world.
And I will say also, you know, one part that you speak about is just organizing your financial drawer.
The junk drawer.
Yeah. And me, you know, I will say Carolyn's very good at organizing our finances and our statements and color coding, and
we are color coded
red and blue. But that must be also just how much mail people just pile up.
Oh yeah. Well, we start out planning. I say, go into the financial junk drawer, gather everything, come into the office. We're going to sort it all out, take it all apart, put it back together again. But that's what happens is you get the financial statements, you throw them in the drawer once a year, drop it off at the accountant's office. And I'll tell you, half the time, people don't even know what they have or why they have it.
Mm-hmm. Well, now we're a lot paperless, right? So that's...
Yeah, but even still. So then you have an internet financial junk drawer.
Totally.
It comes in the form of email. And then because
then you really
get so many.
It.
Exactly. Then you don't open it because you just like delete, delete, delete. And then you really don't know what you have.
Going through COVID, not only your book... You know, being a financial advisor and all the nervousness that went around with that, what did you find were that you were getting your most calls on COVID about from people, and what were they doing, and you know, what were you doing? I know you were very busy during that time period.
Well, I really take a proactive approach, so I have to say I really didn't get calls of panic because a good plan takes into account down markets, up market, and in the grand scheme of things, if a plan is done right, it doesn't really matter whether the stock market goes up or goes down if you have a plan in place. Because if you don't, it's when you don't take that into account and the person is, let's say, approaching retirement and they haven't rebalanced their account and all their money is in this one account that they're hoping to live off of. And then all of a sudden you have a COVID type situation. That's where people get into trouble. But with a good plan in place, that really shouldn't happen. And my clients expect that markets are going to go up and markets are going to go down. It's my job as their financial consultant, their financial quarterback, their advocate, really to ensure that they have good probability of success on their goals. And that's what it comes down to. The goals and breaking those goals down into your needs, wants, wishes, short-term, mid-term, long-term. And what is your probability of success of being able to reach those goals? And if that's done properly, then the capital markets
then
don't matter.
Then you'll write your second book. It won't.
Right.
you know, on a personal level, I want to congratulate you on your son's bar mitzvah.
Oh, thank you.
So I know we're going to party for it, and it's a very, very exciting time. So, you know, we are divorced and happily ever after. So we know you have a divorce and happily ever after type situation going on.
You know why they say divorce is so expensive, right?
Because it's worth it.
Well, you want to pay on one lump sum or over time?
What sentence?
Right.
But we want to know your story. You know, what was your journey through divorce? And tell us a little bit about your journey to your happily ever. You're now remarried. You have two amazing kids. You're a father to two stepkids. What's your story?
My story is I had amazing matrimonial attorneys. So that's my story. I look, marriage is tough. And what I could say is I did everything in my power to try and fix my marriage. I don't ever believe in giving up. I never have in my life. So for me, it was a very difficult situation to feel that failure, I guess, from like that emotional relationship standpoint. But I knew, like anything else, time is a healer and I'm going to find my way. And it's just another bump in the road. And I met my current wife and we have an amazing life together. We work together, so we're with each other 24/7.
Yeah, I was going to say that. You know, my parents work together. They've worked together for about 30 years, so working with your spouse is a big deal.
Yeah.
But I have to say, for Scott and his wife, I mean, there's probably no two people, except maybe Elise and her husband also, who are more compatible, and you two are the same person.
Person. And they both have the best voices on karaoke night, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. That's really my journey. And now we just look to work hard and play hard. I'm a big believer in enjoying your life and doing the things that you enjoy and things that make you happy.
Hence getting your pilot license.
Exactly. It was something I always wanted to do from the time I was a little kid. And actually, when I was going through my divorce, I felt that I needed to do something for myself. Flying was like my therapy. There's nothing else that you can think about other than what's going on right in front of you in the cockpit and speaking of air traffic control and all this kind of stuff. You're not thinking about anything else. So for me, it was my refuge and my therapy. And now it's an exciting hobby. that I can share, not only with my wife and my children, but also with my clients and my friends. So one day, you guys will have to do a couple shots.
I knew that was coming.
Right. So you'll have to take a couple shots of vodka, whatever, you know, take a Xanax or whatever it is, and you got to get on the plane.
That'll be after you sign me up for maybe $5 million more of life insurance
policies. Yes,
yes. And then once I have those in place, then yes.
And am I a beneficiary of those? I don't know. So,
Scott,
tell us where you could find your book.
So my book is called Don't Be a Financial Disaster, and it can be found on Amazon. It can be found on Nook and Kindle and all that stuff. Any online retailer, you can find the book, Don't Be a Financial Disaster. Or for anyone listening, if you go to scottzuckerman.com, I will send you a free copy of the book just for a limited time for the listeners today. Just pay for shipping and handling, and you'll get my book for free. Just go to scottzuckerman.com.
Thank you very much for being here, Scott. We really appreciate your knowledge and expertise and all that.
Thank you. I really appreciate you guys having me. And as always, you're my favorite matrimonial attorneys, and you guys just do a bang up job with everything you do. So keep up the good work.
Thank you, Scott.
And now for our segment, Tales from the Bar. So we always find that when we're at a cocktail party or with a group of friends or at some type of an event and we introduce ourselves and say we're divorce attorneys, people want to know what our best stories are, ask us for advice and things of that nature.
So one of the issues that we have and we hear about is spouses that will kind of loot the marital residence.
We were just talking about that with the rings, with the jewelry and with the engagement rings. And that does happen. You could catch a spouse by surprise and serve them with divorce papers after taking their jewelry and valuables out of the house and securing them in certain ways. And things will disappear. The china. And I was talking to one of my adversaries about that, and they said, who wants the china anymore? Like, I don't know when the last time anybody has ever used their china. I know from my divorce with Charlie, my china is just sitting in my dining room collecting dust with nothing, but they do. They loot the china cabinets, the drawers, and sometimes you're talking significant marital asset, $50,000, $100,000.
And the scary thing about that is, especially with jewelry or any of this personal property, you know, unless it's on an insurance policy as a rider, a personal property rider, which is sometimes the case with jewelry, you know, you don't have everything on there, and it's hard to prove. It's the same like people have cash in the safe. We hear this all the time that there's, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars of cash in a safe, and they take the money. And how in the world do you prove how much money was in that safe?
And sometimes our clients want to try to get police involved and make police reports. And I find that sometimes the police don't want to necessarily get involved in marital disputes, or they don't want to get involved in marital disputes, and they say it's a marital dispute, and they really kind of, you know, wash their hands of it. But first, before we go on, I forgot to mention that if anybody has any questions or any comments or wants us to speak on a certain topic generally, you could visit us at our website at www.divorceandhappilyeverafter.com. Again, divorceandhappilyeverafter.com. There'll be a place there for you to send us comments and suggestions, and you know, we will try to do our best to answer them.
So, you know, the next topic that we hear a lot is, you know, if you're going to purchase a marital residence, sometimes there are threats or concerns. Okay, I'm going to purchase the residence. I'm not in the residence. My spouse is in the residence. What if they do something crazy to the house before I take possession? You know, we've had people threaten to put concrete down the pipes, render.
I actually had one situation where a husband actually tried to put the house on fire, you know, and that's actually obviously serious and dangerous. Nobody was in the house, but just at a time when nobody was around. So
that's something, you know, to consider, and it's crazy to hear about. But I've had many people say, you know, before I give her the house, I'll burn the whole house down. Hopefully they're, you know, open threats, but you never know. The other issue that we've recently come across.
There's sometimes where spouses are kicked out of homes because of orders of protections and stayaways. And then you have one spouse who's left in the home, and we have cases where property gets destroyed, significant property. And, you know, sometimes it's cutting off your nose to spite your face, I would say. But one husband in particular, his business was running out of computers and things of that nature. And he was out of the house, and the wife literally threw water and other liquids and damaged all that property.
Which could have been sold. It could have been distributed. He could have used it for his business, which which would have been an additional, you know, income source that she ultimately would have gotten a piece of.
But it's a fine line between love and hate. We find
people just get so carried away and they almost can't help themselves and stop themselves. We had a case where, you know, one party was supposed to retain a vehicle and it had to be retrieved from a certain location. And, you know, they go to retrieve the car and there's no gas in it. And the other spouse siphoned off the gas. So they had to call a tow truck, you know, and it sounds so petty. And I think we talked about that on one of our prior episodes, you know, labeling food and just the craziness that sometimes, you know, you couldn't even imagine.
What was that thing with the mother brought flowers, like the grandmother? And it's like something that was done for the birthday all the time. And it came home and all the flowers were cut up all over the kitchen.
I think that it was more of an heirloom. I think it was fake flowers that they put out every year for a specific birthday or holiday or something of that nature. And the grandmother was deceased and the wife cut them up and threw them out. It's just sick.
Oh my God, I remember that. So, like I said, you could find us at divorceandhappilyeverafter.com if you have any questions. We are Geffner Kirsch. You can find us at geffnerkirsch.com. Our phone number, 516-268-9898. We're really excited to continue with this. And
we'll see you next time.
That's a wrap, as they say.